sometimes controversial, always politically incorrect, and pro-life without exception, without compromise, and without apology. It's the Pro-Life America Podcast with your hosts, Sarah Waits, and the president of Life Dynamics, Mark Crutcher.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Pro-Life America Podcast. As you heard, I'm Mark Crutcher, and lurking nearby is Sarah Waits.
Hello, everyone.
I think we've got an interesting, if not probably controversial show today, because there's going to be a lot of people that probably won't like what we're going to be saying, but nonetheless.
Shocker.
Yeah. Oh, I've never said anything everybody in the world didn't like. I mean, it's not like me to do that.
No.
But anyway, you have something you think is just rip-roaring hilarious.
It's pretty funny. You know, Twitter always provides a source of entertainment, if not headaches as well.
Aggravation.
Yeah. And this guy posted a satirical tweet tying the Jesse Smollett deal.
Now let's make sure people remember the Jesse Smollett. This
yes.
is where this guy comes
An actor.
Up with it. He comes up with this nonsensical story that
about getting up at 2 o'clock in the morning to go to Subway. First off, what Subway is open at 2 a.m.? I've never seen
first,
one.
Who does that?
And it's in Chicago in the middle of the snow.
Right. And he gets hijacked by a couple of Trump supporters and beat up or something.
Trump supporters who apparently are carrying around with them randomly at 2 o'clock in the morning a bottle of bleach and a noose shouting, "This is MAGA country," right, in Chicago.
In Chicago in the middle of the night. So his story wasn't even...
It was not great.
This guy's not a very good storyteller, apparently.
Well, and then he leaves the noose around his neck as if that's a normal thing to do.
Well, I guess it is normal if you're out walking around in Chicago in the snowstorm waiting for a bunch of Trump supporters to come up and pour bleach on you. But anyway, the media bought into this.
Oh, yeah.
The leftist media bought into this story.
Everybody was talking about this, and anybody who was had an open mind.
No, anybody had five brain neurons firing.
Took a look at this and thought, I don't know about this. This sounds pretty fishy.
The police never believed a minute of it.
Yeah.
It was so preposterous. But the media wanted to believe it.
They wanted so badly for this to be true because this would confirm all of their deep-rooted beliefs about who Trump supporters are.
Yeah.
So anyway, this guy makes a satirical tweet connecting that to the dissolving of the mask mandates on the airplanes. And he tweets, "I boarded a plane today with my son, and mid-flight, the pilot announces that the mask mandate is over. Flight attendants pull off their masks and sneeze directly into their hands while screaming, 'This is MAGA airspace!' My son looked to me in tears. I don't know what to do." And so, of course, most people got that this was a joke. But this guy receives a direct message from Victoria Kim of the New York Times. She writes, "Hi, Jared. I'm a New York Times journalist, and I'd love to speak with you over the phone about what happened on your flight this evening. Can you please give me a call at," and he blocks out the number, "or let me know how I can reach you. Hope this isn't coming too late in your day. Thank you. Look forward to hearing from you."
So this nitwit bought it.
She bought it. Yeah. Hook, line, and sinker. Yeah. And so he responds in an epic way. He says, "Hi, Victoria. I would love to discuss the incident at your earliest convenience. I was pretty upset about the whole thing. Unfortunately, it's satire that only someone at the New York Times would believe. In my time of contemplation, I was wondering how your team deals with a multitude of false stories that you peddle out daily to use as political propaganda. And if you could give me advice on how to take my satire to the next level, best wishes."
Well, you know,
this is hilarious.
These people believe this garbage. It's like all the stuff that they did against Trump for the 4 years he was in office.
Yeah.
They believe it because they want to believe it. On top of that, over the years, I've had a lot of interaction with members of the American media.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I've noticed is, that, yeah, there are a lot of them with hardcore, godless, leftist, Marxist leanings.
Mm-hmm.
That's just the way they think for some bizarre reason. But even though there are a lot of them, I don't find that they're the majority.
Mm-hmm.
What I find is that most people in journalism, and I mean this for the Frog Knot, Texas Gazette, you know, all the way up to the New York Times.
Paper.
It's not any different.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the people in journalism just simply aren't very smart. And I've just seen this time and time again in personal interactions that I've had with them. Lazy is also a very big issue.
I know you've seen this and other people have seen this where they're reached out to a reporter who says they're releasing an article in like an hour and they're looking for a quote from them, which means they already have the article written. They're just looking for the right quote to reinforce their position. They're not looking for an article that actually explores this issue that they're reporting on.
Oh, I've had several of them call me over the years and say, we're writing this article in which you're being attacked by the other side and you're being accused of this and accused of that, but we're going to press in 30 minutes. I need your comment. Like you say, that means they've already got the article written.
Yeah.
And they never called me before that.
Mm-hmm.
They've got an agenda up front.
Mm-hmm.
They write the article to fulfill that agenda, and then they call to get a quote to make it look like they researched what they were talking about, and they weren't.
And there's so much stuff that's coming out right now, whether it's the Hunter Biden deal that the media outlets are getting attacked for, or it's the deal with the Libs of TikTok account, the articles on that. There's so many things proving that the media is just a joke. So I want to point people out to a sticker we have. I have this on my laptop, and I love this sticker. It says, "What is the difference between Bigfoot and honest journalism?" Answer: Bigfoot might actually exist.
Right. Might not be out there.
We're going to do a deal for you guys who listen to the podcast. You will get the sticker for just $2. You can't beat that.
That's a deal.
And you can put it on your computer and then go to Starbucks and just sit there and irritate the people who read New York Times and
now, you know, the other day, day, I got invited to speak at Texas A&M University to the pro-life group down there. And you and I and my wife, Tulane, went down there.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, Texas A&M is a pretty hardcore conservative school. And we asked them if they got a lot of grief, and they said they don't.
There was one of the students that said, even with people who don't necessarily agree with us, because there's some people on campus who don't, that they still engage in discussion, which is really what college campuses and,
well,
and exchanging of ideas
on.
Is about.
What's going on, Sarah, is that those pro-aborts there know they're grossly outnumbered at Texas A&M.
Maybe.
So they're going to be on their best behavior, believe me. Mm. But anyway, it was a good experience, and we got a lot of good questions.
Mm-hmm.
These kids were very thoughtful,
mm-hmm.
and so that was encouraging. But we can see that there has to be some bringing along by the older people in the movement, and a lot of that relates to the media.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to bring up something here before we get to our main topic. The United States Department of Health and Human Services just confirmed in the last few days that the Biden administration is going to implement a policy that does away with any conscience objections to abortion mm-hmm. by people in the medical community.
In other words,
people in the medical community will no longer be allowed to not participate in abortions.
There was a lot of hospitals who are basically ignoring any sort of conscience
right.
exceptions and were trying to force nurses and doctors to do abortions.
Well, this will now be by federal mandate.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
that'll protect these schools against being
any
sued.
Any lawsuits, yeah.
The question is going to become, what are the pro-life doctors going to do? Are they going to say, okay, well, I have to kill this baby because the government tells me I have to? This can set up a lot of confrontation right here.
Mm-hmm.
Matter of fact, it will set up confrontation. There will be members of the medical community out there who are either pro-life or at least not so rabidly pro-abortion that they want to actually do the killings
mm-hmm.
that are going to object to this.
The medical community would like to make you think that everyone in the medical community is pro-choice and loves abortion and
right.
that they believe abortion is just a medical procedure. Nothing could be farther from the truth.
Right.
There are pro-life doctors out there, and even doctors who do abortions have a certain amount of disgust with the procedure. They don't like it. So abortion is not this thing that doctors are just lining up to do. The reason why they're having to force this is because doctors are choosing not to do abortion because they know what it is.
Not only do they know what abortion is,
mm-hmm.
they know what becoming an abortionist is.
Exactly.
And mm-hmm. that's the deal that they don't want to do.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to be known, even in their own minds
mm-hmm.
or to their families or anywhere, that they're an abortionist. So this thing's going to have long-term ramifications. But what it does is expose two groups. First off, the pro-aborts
mm-hmm.
as pathological liars that we've always known they are.
Mm-hmm.
They say that the issue is always about choice, that people should be allowed to choose whether they participate in abortions or not. And it's nobody else's business what they choose. But now all of a sudden, when they can't get people to fill up the abortion clinics to do abortions, all of a sudden now choice goes out the window. So in other words, women have a choice to have abortions.
Mm-hmm.
But you and I don't have a choice about whether we want to pay for them.
Yep, exactly.
That's not our choice. We don't get that option. And now people in the medical community aren't going to have a choice about whether they have to do them or not. And I'm hoping that this is another example, this Health and Human Services mandate that will be coming down here in the next few days or weeks, that the abortion industry has overplayed its hand, because they've done this many times in the past, where they sit around in their little enclaves and convince themselves that everybody in the world's like them, radical baby killers. And then they go out and they act on that assumption. And I'm hoping that that's what they're doing here.
Yeah, because there are medical schools who have dropped abortion training because students don't want to do it.
They're not taking it.
So it should tell you right there, people don't want to do this procedure.
Well, I saw a thing.
But it's abortion no matter what.
You're talking about what colleges teach. I saw a thing the other day. It was another humorous deal. This girl says, I have a degree in gender studies and I can't get a job.
Yeah.
Well, really? Who wants you and your degree in gender studies?
Well, there's very, very few practical applications for that degree, right, other than to teach gender studies.
Right, right. It's amazing. Anyway, on to our main topic for this show. It's what I call the instant guru syndrome.
You wrote about this in Siege, and if you have not read Siege, I really recommend that you get a copy of it. We'll have a link to that in the description. It talks about many other things besides this issue.
Well, this issue is going to become more important. Obviously, no one can deny, even the pro-abortion are agreeing that this is true. The pro-life movement has all the momentum right now. We're the ones that are making all the advances. You can say, well, yeah, but in some states, they're getting triggering legislation that codifies Roe. But those
Why
are
Why do you think they're doing that? Because they see the end of Roe happening.
They see the end of Roe. But also, they're only getting that done in states that you can obviously predict. California, New York, Washington State, the usual suspects who are big into the baby killing business.
Yeah.
They're not making any headway in other places.
Like Texas.
Yeah, or anywhere. Well, one of the things that happens in any socio-political movement or any battle or whatever is that when one side starts getting all the momentum, they start getting a lot of defectors from the other side. So in other words, we're going to be seeing an increase, and we've already seen a small increase, uptick in this, of the number of pro-aborts who are coming out pro-life and saying, I'm disgusted by what I'm seeing here. I didn't know this.
Well, and we cannot discount the fact that the abortion industry already has a high turnover rate because it's disgusting, bloody work.
Right.
Because of that, it just naturally turns people out.
Yeah, and it's getting worse. And you say, well, what's the problem with that? Well, there is no problem on the surface with people defecting to our side. The problem comes in and how we deal with them.
Yeah.
And we have a reprehensible history in how we deal with these people. The way we've dealt with them in the past is unhealthy and counterproductive. And I'm astonished it hasn't had more negative results for us than it has. But the potential is hanging out there and it's going to happen. And this has been going on for years, what I call the instant guru syndrome. We saw it with a guy named Eric Hara that came out years ago.
Okay, for people who don't know who Eric Hara is, give a brief synopsis.
Well, he was a guy that worked for several abortion clinics and was a clinic director at several of them. And he eventually walked out onto the sidewalk, which a lot of them do, and changed over and became pro-life, did a lot of speeches, made a lot of money. We also saw this with a woman named Joy Davis, the same situation. And of course, the two biggest ones that we can think of would be Carol Everett.
She ran an abortion clinic down in Texas.
Yeah, here in Dallas. And their clinic got caught doing abortions on women who weren't pregnant, which we know is a very common scenario. If they take your money up front, and if they then do a pregnancy test and find out you're not pregnant, they're not going to give you your money back. They'll just set you down and do a fake abortion, and you walk out thinking you had an abortion. And of course, the biggest defector of all is Norma McCorvey, who was the Roe in Roe versus Wade.
Yeah.
Now, I've had discussions with Norma before she died, obviously, and with Carol over the years and about this particular issue, because what bothers me is that when these people come out, the way the pro-life movement deals with them is, we parade them around the country like trophies.
Yeah. Look what we have now.
Look what we did. And it makes the pro-lifers feel really good about themselves when some high-profile pro-abort comes out, or somebody comes out of an abortion clinic, walks out onto the streets and starts crying, and I can't take it anymore. I can't continue with this. So we parade them around the country like trophies and install them as leaders in the pro-life movement. And we've done this time and time again, and we do it overnight. It's not like they come out and then 5 years later
Yeah.
They become a leader. I mean, we do it within hours. And what I've often said, and this remains true to this day, right this moment, you could have someone doing late-term abortions at a high-volume abortion clinic right here in the United States. That person could come out on the sidewalk or change their mind based for whatever reason. They get fired. They do honestly change their mind. They see what they're doing. But whatever the reason is, they can come out on that sidewalk, stop right now in the middle of an abortion if they wanted to, come out on the sidewalk and say that they've changed their mind. And in 10 days, they'll be a rock star in the pro-life movement.
They'll be doing speeches, going out.
They'll be
out.
Doing speeches, and they'll be sitting in on high-level pro-life strategy meetings. They'll have a new organization. They'll be raising funds. And usually these people get an enormous amount of attention. We're the ones who make sure of that. And like I said, they become
because everybody loves a Road to Damascus story. Everybody likes a good conversion story.
Or a prodigal son story. Like those stories. And it's understandable that
it gives
but
you the,
we do.
It gives you the Hallmark movie warm, fuzzy feelings.
But the fact is, like I said, you can be working in a late-term, high-volume abortion mill right now.
Yeah.
And within a week or 10 days, you can be a rock star in the pro-life movement with an almost cult-like following. We've seen this with some of these people that have come out in the last few years. They get this almost cult-like following.
That's not to say that some good people have come out who have really benefited the pro-life movement. You just have to be cautious. And I think throwing somebody right out of the abortion clinic, right into the leadership of the pro-life movement is dangerous. Not only because you're ignoring whatever emotional issues they could have had from being involved with abortion, which is so common.
Right.
But what happens if you get somebody who's not honest about why they're there, who's not really pro-life but is here for other reasons? And you can't eliminate that possibility from ever happening.
Well, very often, and I've seen this with a lot of people, and I'm not going to name names right now, but I've seen this with a lot of people. I spent a lot of time with Eric Herron, and I spent a lot of time with Joy Davis. One of the things that you very often see, and I've seen this recently, is that these people work in the abortion provision pool for a while. They've ruined their chances of getting a job anywhere else. Nobody wants to hire them if they come out and say, yeah, I worked for, you know, 10 years in an abortion clinic, or I worked for 5 years in an abortion clinic. There's such an odor and a stench attached to it. Nobody wants them. They run out of options in the pro-abortion side, but they have seen before that other people can come out and claim to be pro-life and cry a little bit in front of the pro-lifers. And like I said, in a few days, they'll be a rock star in the pro-life movement and commanding tens of thousands of dollars for speeches. And so a lot of the times it is a career move that they take. Now, if you want to see how stupid this is, and it is abysmally stupid, I want you to imagine that somebody is an ISIS fighter or a terrorist.
Okay.
And he walks across the battlefield one day with a white flag in his hand and gets in front of some soldiers and says, I can't do this anymore. This is wrong. The things I'm seeing are just not defensible. I want to change my side. I'm going to become on your side. We would obviously welcome that. And that has happened. But what the difference is between that and the way the pro-life movement treats pro-aborts that do the same thing is they don't make them rock stars. And they don't put them in positions of leadership.
Yeah.
You won't find an ex-ISIS fighter sitting in on high-level counterterrorism meetings at the CIA.
Absolutely not.
It's not going to happen because the CIA isn't that stupid.
Yeah.
What you do in that situation is you get all the information you can out of those people as fast as you can.
And they may be sitting on information that they don't know is important.
Right. But you debrief them the best you possibly can, and you do it several times if you have to. And in our case, what we've got to do is we've got to get the information that we need out of them to help fight the abortion industry. And then we don't put them in positions of leadership. They don't sit in on high-level pro-life meetings. They don't become rock stars or gurus in the pro-life movement. If they've been in the abortion industry for any length of time at all, they've got profound emotional baggage that has to be dealt with long before they get into that kind of role in the pro-life movement.
And I know that there's some people who may listen to this and think we're making this up about this emotional baggage that comes along with abortion. But there are abortionists who have written textbooks about abortion talking about the emotional damage and trauma that comes along with it, and about how when they show this procedure to med students, the revulsion and the emotional baggage that they have from that. So this is not just us making this out of whole cloth. There's actual quotes out there and texts supporting this.
Oh, yeah. There's books that have been written about this. Moments on Maple Avenue and and other ones that have been written about this issue of the emotional baggage that you get.
Mm-hmm. We write about that in Line 5. There's a chapter about that.
Right. And I have dealt with a lot of people over the years that have come out of the abortion industry. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you, these people are psychologically traumatized. Mm-hmm. They have no business being in a position of leadership in the pro-life movement for a long, long time until those issues are dealt with. And there are people out here that deal with these issues that are professionals. And we need to get these people professional help. But you don't install them as leaders in the pro-life movement. You do not do that. It's incredibly naive. And it's potentially dangerous because it would be very easy for someone on the pro-abortion side to fake this.
Yeah.
Very easy. And all of a sudden, you know, they're sitting in these top-level meetings. And I told you a moment ago that I'd had this conversation with Carol Everett. Mm-hmm. And she agreed that you don't need to be doing this until you've gotten healed and you've gotten... And she said the way she was treated, and she's not blaming anybody... Carol said when she came out of the abortion industry that within days, they had her out speaking on behalf of the pro-life movement in churches. Mm-hmm. And she said, I was no way, shape, form, or fashion ready for that.
Yeah.
I was not ready for what I was going to see right there. And it caused a lot of emotional problems for her. And Carol had to deal with them for a long time. I saw some of this with her. And Norma had the same type issue.
Well, I saw Carol Everett speak at a banquet. And I mean, I was really impressed with her and just everything that she had to say. But even years later, you can tell that it is still having an impact on her to this day.
Well, sure it is. It'd be foolish to think that it doesn't. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you took a guard out of Auschwitz, you think he doesn't have problems?
Mm-hmm.
You know, he sat there and loaded Jews into the ovens and burned them. So, yeah, they need to get help. But what we do is we get what I call conversion excitement, but we use that conversion excitement as a substitute for good judgment. Mm-hmm. And like I said, that's very dangerous. And we need to support these people when they come out and we need to help them.
I think what we need to do is we need to show love for them. And showing love for someone is putting their needs above your own. Our needs are, we want them to tell everything and tell the world. Yeah, we want the trophy. But we need to do what's best for them, and that's getting them the help that they need.
Right. But we don't need to be putting these people out here as instant gurus in the pro-life movement and making decisions for strategy and so forth. Like I said, it's very naive and it's potentially dangerous to get involved in this conversion excitement phenomenon. You got to just have good judgment. And when I've spoken about this in the past...
I'm sure you get some glares from the audience.
Yeah, that's right, because a lot of these people are the ones who've bought into the instant guru syndrome, and they're part of the cult that follows one of these people. And it is almost cult-like, because you can have people come out and criticize one of these people, and man, they will be leaped on by the pro-lifers.
Mm-hmm.
And I can remember a few times when people have called me on the phone, and I'll probably get a call or two from this deal.
Should I give the phone number?
Yeah, go ahead.
940-380-8800.
Right.
Ask for Mark.
Standing by. Ask for Sarah.
No, ask for Mark.
Anyway, they'll say, well, what about the prodigal son story? And I say, okay, go read the prodigal son.
Yeah, let's go read the prodigal son.
When the prodigal son came home, the father had a banquet for him, and he rolled out the red carpet for him. And when the other son that stayed home objected, the father took that son aside and said, look, it's right that we celebrate your son. He was lost and now he's found. But everything I have is yours, right? What these people say is when the prodigal son comes home, all the people that were there all along, you give all their stuff to the prodigal son. That's what this strategy that the pro-life movement does. And it's like,
well, it's not saying that you're not meant to cherish and be excited about the person who's come over. You absolutely celebrate that. But what is the first thing he does? He gets him clothes. He takes care of him.
Right. But he doesn't turn everything over to him.
He doesn't start to give him a whole bunch of more money. And he's like, here's all this money. Thank you for coming home. Here's all this money.
That's right. But anyway, let me ask you a question. You know the answer because I've already gotten you on this before.
I don't know that you've gotten me. You may think you've
got me. We were talking about the prodigal son. I got you.
No.
The prodigal son story, right? Mm-hmm. When the prodigal son was seen coming down the road, mm-hmm. and he comes back to his father, and who was the one that was most upset to see the prodigal son coming back? And everybody says, well, it was the other brother. Mm-hmm. That's not true. It was the fatted calf. He was the one who was most upset to see the prodigal son coming back.
He's like, oh no, I know what's going to happen next.
I know what comes next, and it's not good. But anyway, that's kind of like my joke about Noah.
That's not a good joke. It's just ridiculous. No, it's not.
What was Noah's wife's name? And everybody says they're trying to...
Because it's not mentioned.
They're thinking in the... Is that
it's never mentioned.
It's never
mentioned.
But we know what her name was.
No, we don't.
Her name...
It was not...
Her
no,
name was Joan.
It was not Joan. It was Joan not of Joan of Arc.
Joan of Arc.
So lame.
No, it's true. That had to be her name. Her name had to be Joan. Joan Noah. Whatever the last name was, you know. So anyway... Now you see why my
your comedy career never
Las
took
Vegas
off.
Las Vegas comedy career really never took off.
Yeah, considering this is your top tier material.
Right. All right. Anyway, I encourage everyone to think about this instant guru syndrome and how dangerous and counterproductive it can be, because it can be. This is a very important thing, and we're going to see this, I think, we're going to see this more and more common in the future as the momentum for the pro-life side builds.
And I want to hear what you guys think about this, because this is kind of an issue that people have an issue with. So if you go to the page on our website for this episode, and of course I will have the link for that in the description, no matter if you're listening to this on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, wherever. But if you go to that page, I want you to leave a comment and let us know what you think about this, because I think this is going to be an important issue going forward.
Oh, it is. I think it's going to be more important as more and more people come out. Mm-hmm. As they see things collapsing.
And we're going to be the only ones talking about this.
Saying, be careful. Don't get into that conversion excitement. Don't get into that mindset. Anyway, that's all I got.
That's all I have.
All right. Until next Thursday, remember, Life Dynamics is not here to put up a good fight.
Mm-mm, we're here to win.
Because winning is how the killing stops. Let us hear from you. We'll see you next week.
Bye, guys.